heart-eating Daesh terrorists. So if the U.S. was really fighting Daesh, why would Washington want to kill the man who fought the terrorists most successfully? Unless Washington wasn't really Daesh's enemy. On Saturday, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, met with Soleimani's family to honor him. He said Soleimani represents the secret of endurance and victory, adding his danger to the enemies now that he is a martyr is even greater than when he was alive. I'd like to welcome my guests to this program. Jim Kavanaugh, writer and political commentator out of New York. Said Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator out of London.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, welcome both of you to the program. I'm going to start off in London with Sayed Mohsen. Sayed Mohsen, if you were to describe Qasem Soleimani, if you were to say who he was, how would you introduce him? What would you say about him?
Well, I think all accounts of those who worked with him, who lived with him, who died for him as well in many ways, all speak of a man who was deeply spiritual, deeply committed to the oppressed, deeply committed to creating a better world. And that that kind of commitment, that heartfelt spiritual commitment, was really one which comes obviously from his own religious background, his commitment to the idea of fighting oppression wherever one finds it. This is from Imam Hussein alayhi salam. This is from the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. These are the figures that Qasem Soleimani would have held as his role models. And he lived his life in a way which was, for me, really, you know, we talk about warrior saints of the past. But for me, I think if anybody embodies that term of warrior saint in the modern contemporary, very hard to find anybody who fits that bill. But if anybody did, it has to be Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani for me, because he not only lived a pious life, he put his life on the line virtually throughout his time since his joining of the IRGC in 1979, through the war in Iran and Iraq war, in which he fought bravely to all accounts, and on to his extraterritorial missions further with the Quds Force, which he embarked upon in the late 90s. And the evidence on the ground tells you, when you go and actually talk to people on the ground and those people who were oppressed, who were being bludgeoned into submission, the Yemenis, the Syrians, the Lebanese, the Iraqis, all across that West Asia region, Haji Soleimani's stamp is there.
Okay.
And is constantly, consistently for protecting the oppressed. This is the man he was.
Okay. Well, Jim, you've just heard Sayed Mohsen describe Lieutenant General Soleimani, and of course Sayed Mohsen is not in Iran, and he's not even Iranian, and so many people throughout the region and in much of the world would probably describe him in the same way. With that being said, what was the main problem that the United States had with such a man?
Well, Lieutenant General Soleimani was an extremely effective organizer of the resistance throughout the region. You know, this is what made him, I mean, he was almost, I presume, and certainly motivated by the kind of personal convictions that we just heard. But he put that into practice in an extremely effective way. He was the one who came in and mobilized the popular mobilization forces in Iraq that saved Iraq's cities from being overrun by Daesh, ISIS. And it's because, and he helped to organize the resistance to invasion and by Daesh, ISIS, and other groups in Syria. So for the purposes of the United States and Israel, he was a very effective enemy. And people, he was able to do this because people trusted him. And even American commanders know this. They know he was a very effective leader, and he was able to mobilize people and get them working together to fight and to stop the advance of these, as you say, head-chopping Daesh ISIS forces. So, but they were all, he was also, in doing that, organizing groups that would be effective in resistance against Israeli and American aggression. So because of that, the Israelis wanted him to go, and the United States took them out for him. And, you know, there were two, actually. One should be aware. There were actually, it was another attempted assassination the same day of an Iranian advisor in Yemen. So this is was a part of a military strategy that mirrors the Israeli strategy of killing Iranian scientists. This was kill the most effective military leaders, those who are the most effective at organizing resistance throughout the region. And that is really the real target of all the American and Israeli aggression now. It's not nuclear weapons, which don't exist. It's Iranian influence in organizing resistance in a number of countries to Israeli and American aggression.
Well said, Mohsen. Now, some people think that the assassination of General Soleimani was something that former U.S. President Donald Trump unilaterally ordered. I want to talk about that side of things because that's not really the case. I mean, we saw even Joe Biden, it wasn't that he was sorry that it was happening. He was just concerned of possible effects after that took place. Your take in general that, you know, Washington had basically labeled him number one nemesis in the region.
Well, you're absolutely correct in saying that Donald Trump alone is not responsible for what was carried out, this terrorist act. That's the only way to describe it, because if whether you're a state or whether you're an individual or an organization, you carry out extrajudicial killings, that's terrorism by any definition. And the United Nations has pretty much their rapporteur who did the investigation on this whole incident, the extrajudicial killings rapporteur, described it as unlawful and arbitrary. So, first of all, the entire American machine, the entire what I call Zio Western imperialist machine, industrial military arms complex, call it what you like, has a say in this this dirty business of murdering Qasem Soleimani. Now, the fact is that you know, the Americans and the Israelis have given themselves a carte blanche. They've committed to something the Iranians today described as excessive unilateralism, granting themselves effectively the power to violate any international law and agreement. Now, once that precedent has been set, it means that we're on globally on a path towards war on a scale potentially that we've never witnessed before. Because if this is allowed to become the norm, then what stops Russia, China, anybody else wanting to also do the same and expect to get away with it? I mean, Iran has called on the UN to take formal action. They said that their legal department, in fact, of the Iranian presidential office, has said all legal initiatives in its power, the UN that it's referring to, should be used to condemn U.S. actions and to discourage similar moves in the future.
So do you think that that's going to happen, though?
Well, the thing is, you know my opinion generally on the United Nations, that all of these organizations, these so-called international organizations, largely get funding either from the U.S., or their partners, and a combination of the corporate, financial, private corporate world. Both of those entities are part and parcel of what Ayatollah Khamenei calls the global arrogance, which actually perpetrates plunder, rape, pillaging of all of these lands in the first place. So it's a bit like going back to the rapist as one who's raped and expects justice from him. This is literally what for me, the UN is, it's just an extension. It's another, if you like, you know, institution of power, or a power institution used by the same elitist forces to subjugate the independent nations like Iran, Venezuela.
Okay. Well, let me get Jim back in this conversation. Same question. Do you think that, because Iran is perhaps going to try to, when they talked about the legal ramifications and trying to get those who are responsible to an international court, how likely do you think that that's to happen, Jim?
Short answer, very unlikely, for all the reasons just described. And, you know, that doesn't mean they shouldn't do it, because along the way you're going to get rulings and decisions that are going to, you know, buttress your case and make clear the outrageousness of what happened, okay? You know, this was, don't forget, this was a meeting that Donald Trump, the President of the United States, asked the President of Iraq to arrange between Mohandi and Soleimani to discuss peaceful settlements of things. And it was in that context that both the state representative of Iran and the state representative of Iraq were killed by an American strike. You know, this is calling for a parley of peace and then shooting the people who come to the table. It's absolutely outrageous. But the American government now has instituted, even forget about it, the United Nations. They don't even bother with the United Nations very much. They have what they call the rules-based international order, which is essentially we make the rules and you follow our orders. And they have given themselves, and Israel certainly, impunity to do whatever we want. We see Israel almost daily bombing Syria. There's absolutely no justification. It's completely illegal. So things like this, things like murdering two state representatives you've called on to meet together, and, you know, bombing sovereign countries like Syria daily and weekly, are things that are never brought up before the so-called international community, because ultimately the United Nations is controlled by states. But even they don't even get into that venue, because the United States doesn't care about that anymore.
Well, Sid Mohsen, immediately following the terrorist strike, people started calling for the U.S. to leave the region. Let's look at what has happened to the U.S. in this region since then. I mean, if we look at Afghanistan or we look at Iraq, your overall assessment of what has happened to the United States since that time?
Well, what's happened is really the defeat of the Americans has been absolute in Afghanistan, at least militarily speaking. They are certainly not there in the way that they would have liked to have been, totally in control of Afghanistan. So they've lost, if you like, their card, if you like, against Iran in the east. That was the border. The Afghan border was one that they were hoping to occupy and cause problems for Iran from there. They've failed in Iraq, because what we've seen is that there is an overwhelming, if you like, feeling, both democratically within the political circles and the people at large, that the Americans are an occupying force in Iraq and there's no need for them to be there. They were so-called brought in to deal with ISIS and Daesh. They never really did that. It was, again, Qasem Soleimani, General Soleimani, who moved in rapidly in places like Mosul and Tikrit and held up the ISIS advance, which, you know, many analysts and journalists and others who've researched say very clearly was something which the Americans, in fact, were backing. The ISIS invasion into Iraq was part of that. And it is Qasem Soleimani who stopped and thwarted their plans there. So the fact of the matter is that in Iraq, they've also lost. In Syria since then, of course, what's happened is this cumulative international feeling that the Americans are a rogue state. I mean, even their own partners are struggling to keep up within NATO. They're almost like having to be forced to continue the alliance, because the Americans were demanding money and are wanting even more, if you like, efforts from the Europeans to go along these kind of crazy imperialist plans in the Middle East in particular. So that alliance has definitely frayed, and I think Iran's stand has definitely helped that. Of course, it made Iran and Iranian people wake up in case they were going to sleep on the job, because after the death of the Lieutenant General, the public unanimously voted in a conservative establishment, as the West would put it. You know, Ayatollah Raisi is somebody who's not to be messed around with and would give the West very little room in negotiations on the JCPOA and many, many other issues. So what we've seen is that Iran itself, by the action, this kind of rather ridiculously stupid action by the Americans, rallied the Iranian people around the establishment.
Okay.
So it was kind of a shot in the foot there as well. I mean, I could go on.
All right, stay with me, Said Moshe. I know you could go on, and I would love to hear you, but I'm limited with the time. Jim, do you think that the targeted assassination by the U.S. lifted the facade for some that Washington was really in the region to fight the terrorists? Or not? Do you think that most people realize that by now? Or is it because of the mainstream media, perhaps they really still think that the U.S. was trying to fight Daesh? Your assessment.
Well, I think in the world, certainly that was a major element of the disillusion with anybody who still had disillusion about what the United States was doing. As we've said, Soleimani was one of the most effective. Nobody was more effective as a personal leader in fighting Daesh and ISIS. And that didn't make any difference to the Americans. If anything, it was a negative. So I think that most of the world, by the time of the Soleimani assassination, certainly once it happened, not only the Soleimani assassination, but Mohandi also, said, the Americans, they've lost complete, faith in any notion that the Americans are there for democracy or to fight terrorism or anything else but to force compliance with American imperialism and Zionism. So I think that now in the United States, it's a little different. And I think a lot more people in the United States, not necessarily because of the Soleimani assassination, but that's going to be one of the things, but also just because of the general obvious failures in terms of what Americans think should be happening in places like Afghanistan and Iraq and Syria, and the complete absolute non-senselessness from the point of view any reasonable policy of Syrian and of Americans' actions in Syria, Iran, and Iraq and Afghanistan have come to the, a lot more Americans have come to the conclusion that we know this isn't about democracy, it isn't about human rights, and it isn't about fighting terrorism. Mm-hmm. It's about something else, whether it's getting the oil or, just forcing compliance. I would say we have a long way to go still in recognizing what it is about and the ways in which, from the point of view of the people who are pursuing these policies and really advocating for these policies are very successful. They've destroyed states and weakened states and taken states off the board, and that's what they want to do with Iran.
Well, Said Moshe, now Iran sent missiles attacking the U.S. Zain al-Assad base in Iraq after the assassination of the general, inflicting a lot of damage both on troops and property. What message did that attack send? And by the U.S. not responding to that missile attack, what message did that send?
Firstly, on a domestic front, it sent a message to the Iranian people that the Islamic Republic of Iran has prepared very, very well on a military level. Their ballistic missile capability is up there with the best in the world. Still not, at number one, but it's definitely knocking around in a territory which makes it very difficult for the enemies of Iran, namely Israel and America and their allies in the West. It makes it very difficult for them to consider attacking Iran without serious consequences being reaped. Now, the second thing is that it tells the partners of the Americans and the Israelis, or the UAE and the likes of Bahrain and clandestinely Saudi Arabia, of course, these sort of nations that have been puppet governments that have operated for Zio-American imperialism in the region have got the message that actually America and America's military might isn't necessarily going to save them, and that at the end of the day, there's going to come a day when the oil runs out and the military protection, which the Americans have supposedly offered them for all these decades, in fact, isn't as impregnable as they thought. Their Patriot missiles, etc., have been exposed, and all sorts of other systems, which are defense systems, are not necessarily as effective as presumed. And they've also seen that their real geographical long-term neighbor, the Islamic Republic of Iran, is very, very capable of, you know, being the most powerful nation in that region. So they've got a real problem on their hands. They have to now either fall further into the laps of the Americans, or they've got to think very carefully about renegotiating their positions vis-a-vis Iran, which previously have been all about collaborating with Israel and the Americans. So we're seeing a huge turmoil there, I think, in terms of what the future of the neighbors of Iran will be.
Okay, stay with me because I'm almost out of time. Jim, let me get you back in on this. Jim, where do you see this going? I mean, you heard Seyed Mohsen talking about the overall status in the region because of that attack. After that assassination and looking at it today, did it help the United States in any way? It appears that the U.S. has lost face in the region, lost status globally, and it almost seems like it's in free fall. I mean, your assessment. We have about, 40 seconds. Go ahead.
Well, yes, politically it's in free fall in the sense that nobody believes the stories, the narratives they give anymore. And what they are definitely trying to do now is to do something about this power that was just well described that Iran has now. They have the power to hurt Israel, the United States, and anybody who attacks them. And that's what they're trying to do with the JCPOA, is to get rid of the missile technology and the power of the resistance groups around the region that will fight on behalf of against any kind of aggression. So this is what they need to do. The United States still has an enormous amount of military power. They can do a lot of destruction to a lot of people, but they can't do it without getting hit back in a serious way.
Okay, and on that note, so sorry, I'm going to have to end it right here. Appreciate both of you being with us. Out of New York, Jim Kavanaugh, writer and political commentator. Out of London, journalist and political commentator Seyed Mohsen Abbas. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another Spotlight. Goodbye.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Dear listeners, hello everyone. Welcome to another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and in this edition, we will try to have a closer look at the 25th chapter, Surah Al-Furqan. First, let's just listen to the verses we're going to talk about in this program, and we'll be back shortly. So stay with us.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful. Look how they strike for you comparisons, but they have strayed, so they cannot find a way.
The ninth verse says, انظر كيف ضربوا لك الأمثال فضلوا فلا يستطيعون سبيلا. Behold, how they strike similitudes for you, but they have gone astray, so they shall not be able to find a way to the truth. Having a look at the beginning of this ninth verse, we understand that this sentence clearly illustrates the fact that against the call of Allah and the Holy Quran, whose content is an expressive proof of its relationship with Almighty Allah, they fell back on some elusive words, and they wanted to cover the face of truth by these groundless words. And we know that if one gets misled, it is when logic, miracle, and accomplishments of the Prophet, these are not paid attention to. When the wealth, the post, and seeking pretext get to be the aim, one will get misled, of course. This is just like a person who resorts to some seeking pretext, being clearly baseless, in order to stand against our logical arguments. And we don't want to answer that. But there is one clear point here. You may see with what elusive words does he want to stand against the logical reason? And verily, all of their words and all of their parts, they were illogical. The answer is simple. At first, why must a prophet be one of the angels? But intellect and knowledge say that human must lead human beings, not someone else. A human must lead others that he knows and perceives all their pains, all their needs. Someone that must be from among the people. Someone that understands the problems. Someone that understands the issues of the life they have. So he will be a paragon in all aspects, and people can be inspired in all programs. If an angel were sent down, certainly this aim would not be fulfilled. People did not have anything to go after, anyone to look. People wouldn't have any kinds of programs. They would say, if he speaks about piety and paying no attention to the world, it is because he is an angel. It is because he needs nothing. If he speaks about modesty and he calls to chastity, it is because he knows nothing of sexual desire. Wouldn't people say these, dear listeners? And of course, there are also many other matters.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
أنتم الفقراء
Insights into the Holy Quran.
By Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
But more important than that, is it really necessary to send an angel to be the company of man for the sake of confirming him? Are no miracles, especially a great miracle such as the Holy Quran, enough for understanding this reality? Why would someone go far to say that an angel must accompany the Prophet and we have to see him in order to believe in the prophethood? Moreover, eating food like other men and going to markets cause him to associate with people more. And this is what everybody understands. This being like the people will enable him to know their life more deeply. This helps him to carry out his missions better. There is not only loss or harm in this, but it is a kind of help for him. So the verse says, كَيْفَ ضَرَبُوا لَكَ الْأَمْثَالِ فَضَلُّوا. They were misled by these false accusations. They had also other accusations. They said, why did the Prophet not have any kinds of treasures? The personality of the Holy Prophet ﷺ does not depend on treasure. His personality is something which is far from wealth and huge gardens full of fruits. This is the pagans' deviating conception of personality and even nearness to Allah as being dependent on wealth and money. But prophets have come to say that the value of man is depending on his knowledge, is depending on his faith, his piety, and his deeds. This is what happens when you do not pay attention to the logic, to the miracle, and to the accomplishments of the Prophet. كَيْفَ ضَرَبُوا لَكَ الْأَمْثَالِ فَضَلُّوا. Behold, how they strike similitudes for you, but they have gone astray. Dear listeners, we'll continue talking about this verse in the next program. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Things always worked for me. Why ends when faith begins?
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
12,000 seats, but 12,000 plus women,
swarmed into the stadium with all chanting one slogan, "We're all Qasem Soleimani." 2 years have passed since the top Iranian military commander was assassinated by the U.S., and yet Iranians do not cease to keep his memory alive. Days ahead of the second anniversary of Soleimani's assassination, these Iranian women gathered to pay tribute to him.
To us, General Soleimani was like a father who made our country a safe place in an oasis of chaos and terrorism. Now that he's gone, we all feel to be orphaned.
Soleimani was commander who did not allow the terrorists to approach our borders. He defeated Daesh in Iraq and Syria, so the entire region always owes him a big thank.
General Soleimani was the commander of the Quds Force of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, which is in charge of conducting overseas operations. He, together with commander of Iraq's popular mobilization units, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, was assassinated in 2020 in a U.S. air raid outside Baghdad International Airport on a direct order from then-U.S. President Donald Trump. These people demand that the Iranian government bring the perpetrators to justice.
The message of our gathering today is that we strongly urge our authorities to punish those who committed this crime. The former U.S. president must be held accountable. American politicians thought that by killing General Soleimani, they would be able to let the terrorists win. But we are all going to preserve his legacy.
General Soleimani is well known for his role in dislodging Daesh terrorists in Iraq in 2017. He also spearheaded major operations in Syria that led to the recapturing of key areas from Daesh. This made him rise to fame in the region and beyond as the nemesis of terrorists. In 2020, millions of people in Iraq and Iran took part in his funeral ceremony to bid him farewell. Iran is planning mass ceremonies on General Soleimani's second assassination anniversary on January the 3rd.
Calling themselves the daughters of General Soleimani, these ladies say this gathering sends the message that Soleimani was not just an influential military commander, but a popular public figure whose character continues to inspire more Iranians who feel bound to preserve what he stood for. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
This conference in the capital Sana'a, Yemen's Eye for Humanity Center for Rights and Development, released its new report on the Saudi crimes committed against Yemenis during 2021. The report highlights the number of victims of the Saudi air attacks and the destruction of the country's infrastructure.
Recently, the Saudi-led coalition has escalated its raids against civilian facilities and residential areas crowded with civilians in Yemen and tried to justify this by saying that there were military activities in those areas, which was not true. We monitor all the crimes of the Saudi-led coalition and the victims who fall in Saudi airstrikes and mortar shelling.
The report says Saudi warplanes have launched over 9,900 airstrikes against civilian facilities across Yemen last year, killing 387 civilians, including 96 children, and injuring hundreds more. In a previous report, the human rights group said more than 43,000 civilians had been hurt or killed in relentless airstrikes across Yemen since Saudi Arabia launched a war on its southern neighbor in 2015. It said nearly 4,000 children were among those killed.
As people around the world celebrate the New Year with festivals and joyful events, Yemenis enter a new year of war and siege imposed on their country by Saudi Arabia. People here believe that the years-long resistance will eventually bring Riyadh to justice for its crimes in Yemen. Abdulatif Roshali, Sana'a.
France has assumed the rotating presidency of the Council of the European Union for the next 6 months, with Emmanuel Macron promising to make the world's largest common market into a more influential and independent bloc. Yet the European Union begins 2022 beset by major difficulties: the open wound of Brexit, marginalization in global geopolitics, an uncertain post-corona economic future coming on the heels of a lost decade of economic growth, and deep divisions on the issues of immigration, right-wing economics, and relations with Moscow. The European Union appears to be at a crossroads. With Angela Merkel finally stepping down, there is no clear leader or figurehead. Emmanuel Macron wants to assume her mantle, but many say that his liberal strongman approach to the Yellow Vests has reinforced perceptions that the EU is not just non-democratic, but anti-democratic. Historically, no country's elite has been more pro-Europe than in France, and no French leader has been more pro-EU than Macron. However, analysts remind that Macron only has the power to push the EU's agenda in a certain direction and not to decide policy unilaterally, as he has often done in France.
It's a bit egotistical and ethnocentric to think that France will be able to accomplish anything more than Slovenia, Sweden, or any of the other previous heads of the European Union. So, in the matter of a common defense policy, of a green energy transition, of economic regulation, of ending economic stagnation, Macron won't be able to accomplish in 6 months anything which Brussels hasn't been able to achieve in the past 10 years.
With a tightly contested presidential election looming in April, it seems certain that Macron's continental-sized ambitions will be constrained by domestic politics.
C'est plus un obstacle.
I think Macron will find the rotating presidency to actually be an obstacle to his re-election ambitions. Representing the interests of 70 million Frenchmen and also 450 million citizens of the European Union, and also being a candidate running for re-election, are three very different hats to wear. He will find himself in many conflicting positions.
The philosophy of Angela Merkel was marked by avoiding tough solutions to social questions while also demanding right-wing economic changes. As the EU emerges into a very different post-corona world, Europe may be demanding different solutions and possibly even different leaders before France's rotating presidency is over. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
...2021 has come to an end, but the battle for peace and justice still continues here. In the Indian-administered Kashmir, people are hopeless more than ever as things have slipped from bad to worse. The Indian government said Kashmir will return to normalcy when it abrogated its special status in August 2019. But after that, the region has seen an outburst of violence. Media reports say that over the last 3 years, nearly 900 people have been killed in the region. Out of these casualties, 580 were militants, 180 were government forces, and 125 were civilians. People here say they are not hopeful that the central government will bring them justice and treat them fairly.
People are often excited on New Year's Eve, but we are an exception. We are fearful of what might happen to us the next year, because this year was full of bloodshed. We only seek peace through dialogue.
We had terrifying experiences in 2021. So many lives were lost. The region's unemployment rate is highest in India. Some decisions were taken against the people of Kashmir, which were not expected. Now we seek nothing but peace. 3 decades of strife is enough.
Following India's move to cancel the region's partial autonomy, Kashmir has witnessed many changes coming without the consent of its people. For example, people who are not permanent residents of Kashmir were barred from purchasing property up until 2 years ago. But now, all Indians can buy property in the region. People here say the room for dissent is limited. Those who criticize policies of the government are frequently detained, so people of Kashmir are forced to be silent. In 2021, the region saw around 275 incidents of bloodshed, including civilians, militants, and government forces. Estimates say 189 pro-independence fighters have been killed in 2021, but authorities say challenges are still there.
Hybrid militancy is the biggest challenge for the year 2022. A major achievement in 2021 was the peaceful burial of Sayyid Ali Gilani. 168 militants are currently active in Kashmir.
The Indian-administered Kashmir has been a bone of contention between India and Pakistan since the partition of the subcontinent in 1947. The two countries claim the region in full but rule it in parts. More than 3 decades of low-intensity conflict in Kashmir has exhausted the region socially as well as economically. Almost every household in the region has suffered losses. New Year is no time for them to celebrate. Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
This gathering in Iran's town of Shahrareh is a tribute to a man who's known as the father of national security in Iran, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Ahead of the second anniversary of his assassination, Iranian people and senior officials gathered to commemorate him and mourn his loss.
General Soleimani is no longer with us, but his legacy will continue across the generations to come. His assassination is a huge miscalculation on the part of the U.S. He was an influential axis in the region, and his assassination led to the humiliating ouster of American troops from Iraq and then Afghanistan.
General Soleimani was the commander of IRGC's Quds Force, which is in charge of conducting overseas operations. He, together with commander of Iraq's popular mobilization units, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, was killed in 2020 in a U.S. air raid outside Baghdad International Airport on a direct order from then-U.S. President Donald Trump.
General Soleimani was the spearhead of the fight against terrorism in our region. So by assassinating him, the U.S. sought to dispose of him to allow the terrorists to roam freely in the region to serve the interests of the American government.
By assassinating General Soleimani, the U.S. thought in vain that it will stop his anti-terror activities. But in fact, Soleimani is still alive in the hearts of millions of Iranians who will continue his path stronger than ever.
General Soleimani holds a reputation for dislodging Daesh terrorists in Iraq in 2017. He also led major operations in Syria that resulted in the recapturing of key areas from Daesh. His efforts made him known as the nemesis of the terrorists in the region. In 2020, millions of people in Iraq and Iran took part in his funeral ceremony to pay tribute to him and bid him farewell.
2 years into the incident, Iranians still mourn the loss of General Soleimani. They say they will not forget his endeavors in the fight against terrorism, something which earned him the title of a national hero and the guarantor of regional security. Yusuf Jalali from the town of Ray.
Iran's lead delegate to the Vienna talks, Deputy Foreign Minister Ali Bagheri Kani, says there's been relatively good progress over the past few days in the negotiations aimed at restoring the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA.
The main focus of the negotiations was sanctions removal. We had several meetings with the EU coordinator and the three European signatories, both on verification and guarantees.
Iran says it will go back to its nuclear commitments only after it verifies the full removal of U.S. sanctions. Tehran has also demanded guarantees that the U.S. will not withdraw from the JCPOA again or impose sanctions that violate the deal. A European source close to the negotiations says all participants agree that verification and assurances have to be reflected in the final document, but that there are still questions on how that is possible. So are these issues going to create major obstacles in the way of a final agreement?
Yes, it's a major problem because these European diplomats know quite well how verification can take place. It's not something strange. If the Iranians cannot use the banking system because behind the scenes the Americans are threatening banks, then that's a violation of the JCPOA.
Russia's lead delegate, Mikhail Olyanov, said he believed an agreement could be achieved in the first half of February, adding that although the discussions were difficult, there was steady progress.
General impression, business-like atmosphere, positive trends, recognized by everybody, by all participants. We need to be patient, persistent in our efforts, and we will overcome all the problems.
Informal consultations are set to continue within the framework of the Vienna talks. The eighth round will resume after a 3-day break for the New Year holidays on Monday. Homa Lezgi, Vienna.
France has broken the European record for corona infections, and nations across Western Europe are also reaching new daily highs as the pandemic has entered a new but seemingly less deadly phase.
The coronavirus right now is exploding right now in France. It's very scary to see. I saw over 200,000 infections in France in one day. So I'm nervous. I'm trying to get back to the United States right now, and I'm waiting for a COVID test right now. I'm very nervous. I want to make sure that it's negative so I'm able to get back home.
France currently has over 4 million active cases of corona, but 99.9% of them are classified as mild. Daily deaths are half of what they were a year ago, while shorter quarantines are being approved. Cases are soaring in part because many more people are getting tested prior to holiday gatherings, but France's hospital admissions are just a third of previous peaks. It appears increasingly certain that the new Omicron variant may spread like wildfire, but that it is significantly less lethal, causing many to have a cautious sense of relief.
Corona is mainly just a bad flu. It's only a serious risk for certain types of people. But for the overwhelming majority of people, if you get vaccinated, if you quarantine when you have symptoms, if you use common sense to protect yourself and others, then all will be fine.
The high transmission rate of Omicron does have some taking scientifically questionable steps not seen since the early days of the pandemic. Paris has just made face masks mandatory in all public places, even outdoors. Some nations, which aren't seeing an increase in cases, have banned public holiday festivities anyway. France, Italy, and other countries are debating making their health passes even more restrictive, which many say is an abuse of personal freedom. France has long been considered the most vaccine-skeptical nation in the world, but measures which amount to either get vaccinated or live in social isolation have coerced 80% of the country into getting vaccinated. One fact appears vital. In France, the unvaccinated are far more likely to be in intensive care than those who have chosen to be inoculated. What many are hoping for in 2022 is that Omicron truly does herald the end of the lethal phase of Corona 19, which would render moot the controversies and uncertainties over how to best handle the long-running pandemic. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Israel captured Syria's Golan Heights in the closing stages of the regime's 1967 war on Arab nations and annexed the occupied territory in 1981 in a move that was not recognized by the international community. The UN Security Council, in its resolution 497, adopted unanimously in December 1981, declared the Israeli decision null and void and without international legal effect. Nonetheless, former U.S. President Donald Trump granted U.S. recognition to Israel's sovereignty over the Syrian territory in 2019. The administration of current President Joe Biden, which remains critical of its predecessor for its unilateral approaches, has not taken any move to reverse the decision. Amid the U.S. blind support, the Israeli premier unveiled a plan on Sunday to double the regime's settler population in the occupied Golan Heights from the current 25,000 with a multi-million dollar plan. The land is rich in water sources. Naftali Bennett said the move has been prompted by the Trump administration's recognition of Israeli sovereignty over the Golan and the Biden administration's indication that it will not soon challenge that decision. Syria has reacted to Israel's decision to expand the number of Jewish settlers in the occupied Golan Heights, calling it a dangerous and unprecedented escalation and a war crime.
Israel continues with its settlement policy and systematic violations, which are war crimes. The Golan Heights is an integral part of Syrian soil, and we will work to return it in full to the homeland by any means permitted by international law.
In the light of the U.S. backing, Israel has also been expanding its settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories, which are illegal under international law. Palestinians believe the U.S. brokered normalization deals between Israel and some Arab states have emboldened the regime to press ahead with its expansionist agenda and land grab policies. But such expansionist policies are just the tip of the iceberg, as acts of violence by Israeli forces and settlers have intensified against Palestinians in the West Bank. That alongside frequent shelling and air raids against the besieged Gaza Strip.
The international community has stopped short of taking any practical action in the face of Israel's seizure of Syria's Golan Heights, the occupation of the West Bank, and atrocities against Palestinians as a whole. Israel's aggressive policies will not change the truth that the Golan remains part of Syria, but its fresh expansionist move will create further tensions in a region that has been paying the price of Tel Aviv's destabilization activities.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars from IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. You are listening to and with me in the studio are two experts, two Islamic scholars from the Islamic House of Qom, Brother Ali Alavian and Said Mohsen Naghvi. This series of Viewpoints is concerned with the speeches and thoughts of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. Before anything, let's say salam to the experts over here. Said Mohsen, salam alaikum, brother, and welcome to the show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting.
You're welcome, and Brother Alavian, salam alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. Thanks for having me here.
You're welcome, brother. You know that 1 year have passed the martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani, who was killed in a drone attack by the U.S. last year. And for the commemoration ceremony of this dear general of Iran, Brother Mahmoud, the producer of this program, tried to dedicate this series of the program to the speeches and thoughts of Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, about General Soleimani. You know, on different occasions after the martyrdom and even in the first commemoration ceremony, a leader has talked about Qasem Soleimani and talked about his main attributes. But before getting to the attributes enumerated by the leader, let me ask you, Sayyid Mohsen, why General Qasem Soleimani had such a high position in the eyes of Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, obviously, one thing which we need to keep in our minds is the criteria of looking at a person is taqwa, basically.
That's right.
And if you want to see a person, whether he is a good person or bad, you must look whether he is pious or he is muttaqi or not.
That's right.
Is he God-weary or not?
Okay.
General Qasem Soleimani, obviously, from the beginning when there was a war between Iran and Iraq, the 8 years war against the Saddam regime, in that time and in the history over the time, he showed that he was a God-weary person, and he fought for Islam. His, we can say, like he was concerned about the Islam, the expansion of Islam. And not just the Islam, the mere Islam, but the true Muhammadan Islam.
That's right.
And anyone who has such a characteristic, such a thinking, obviously, he must have, he must be seen as a good person in the eyes of the scholars.
Okay.
Supreme Leader also, obviously, he's trying to expand the Muhammadan Islam, and he is the leader of the Muslim Ummah.
Yeah.
So in the Muslim Ummah, if you find such a person who, without his personal, we can say, like, aims or goals, is fighting and living for the Islam itself, so obviously this kind of person should be seen as a good person.
As he himself said in his memoir, said, I was going to enter the Iran-Iraq war for just only a 15-day mission, but I stayed over there. It was a temporary mission, okay, at the very beginning when he was young, and just, we can say, just recruited by IRGC on that time. But up until the end of his life, he was, we can say, a trustworthy member of the IRGC. Now, what's your take on that, Brother Ali? Why, you know, Supreme Leader of Iran, we can say, and we know that it is very grievous for the leader, and it was very sad for the nation, and it was clear exactly from the prayer, we can say, that the leader did on the body of, we can say, Sardar, the general in Tehran. That was really a sad moment, and it showed that this General Qasem Soleimani had a very specific position. And we know that after the Islamic Revolution, he was the only person who was given the Zulfiqar Medal by the leader, and he was called as the Sepahbod. This was the only time that a person was given this kind of medal by the leader of Iran. This shows his high positions. What's your take on that, brother?
In Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Allah's peace and blessing be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. In addition to what the dear Sayyid mentioned, that he's being pious and a God-fearing person, I want to add some other features.